You're listening to the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Your whole life can change in an instant. About 50 million adults in the United States have chronic pain, and because of a car accident, Robbie is one of them. In their marriage vows, Robbie and Sammy promise to stand by one another and provide strength when needed. And lately, they've been facing some of their biggest challenges. Join them as they share the ups and downs of living with chronic pain.
Hello, guys, and welcome back to, the Boogeyman Podcast, but
it's the Painful Truth
of Living with Chronic Pain Podcast. We have so many podcasts we produce, and I had our Boogeyman one in our
wrong
head.
Wrong one.
But yeah. Wrong one. So, welcome back to the Painful Truth of Living with Chronic Pain. We are your hosts. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Sammy.
And today, we have a special guest for you.
Yes. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, I'm Jenny, Jenny Jones with Lysa Polyp, and I have chronic pain.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Get that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why you're on the
that's
show.
Right. Yes. That's right. Yes. I'm with you to share it.
So, Jenny, I'm interested. How did you find our show?
Instagram.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It was, your guys' account was one that was suggested for me to follow, so I did. And then I reached out.
Where are you based out of?
In Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
So you get a lot of storms there.
Yeah. Yeah. We had some yesterday, but I didn't get any like power outages or anything. We were okay.
That's good. Yeah.
So did you watch the movie Twister? I just have to ask.
I did the first one. I honestly don't have any interest though in watching the second one, but I
it
heard
was actually
good.
Pretty good.
I've heard that, but I'm
yeah.
like,
Glenn Powell did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh,
they're going to make a second one of that. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, so. I only remember, like, one scene from the first one, and it's, like, where they, like, strapped on to the bar outside in the ditch. That's all I remember.
Yeah.
I hear that that movie was a pain to make. Like, production,
I have heard that, too.
From start to finish, mm-hmm. it was hard to produce.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So you're an author as well.
Yes, I am. I have a children's book about familial adenomatous polyposis.
Okay.
So we should probably start there.
So let's start there.
What is that?
What is that?
So it's a rare disease. It's hereditary. It's listed as hereditary colon cancer syndrome, but it's really so much more than that. It starts with the colon. So we have these adenomas that will produce into the thousands for us at a very young age, and they will turn cancerous at some point. And so the colon is guaranteed to become cancerous. Other parts of the body that they develop in, I mean, they have that chance, but it's not maybe as aggressive, I would say, as with it is with the colon. Like, we aren't getting, like, thousands of polyps in our small intestines. Mm-hmm. You know, we might get some. And so with that, then we tend to have our colons removed at some point, and then we end up having other health conditions that kind of come along as an effect of that, as well as there's some other manifestations of FAP that can happen outside of the body, too, that are not polyp-related, like desmoid tumors and bone growths and things like that.
Yeah, wow. And so it was your grandfather and your mother who also had it?
Mm-hmm. And then my grandfather's sister and their mother also had it, and so on through the line. But while I was alive, it was just my mom and my grandpa that I got to meet with it.
And does your book follow that?
So it's kind of like a mix of a little bit of my experiences mixed into the possibilities of what could happen in other scenarios with it. So it doesn't really... I don't really talk about myself in it so much in my storyline, but I do weave in some of my experiences with it.
So tell us about the book. Walk us through it.
Okay. So we got these, so it originated really the idea from, there was a lady that reached out to me a few years ago, several years ago, and she asked me for a tattoo idea for FAP, but she wanted to be like kind of cryptic. And so we came up with a sleeping mutant type tattoo idea.
Our
book.
Listeners are going to ask, what is FAP?
Familial adenomatous polyposis.
Yeah, I just want everybody to be on the same page.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
So when people are going to be like, oh, what's that? Especially when they're listening to this in their cars. Mm-hmm. But that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so I took the mutant idea, and those are my two main characters. And so my stepson, he helped draw those two characters. And so it follows their experiences with FAP and their friendship. And because one of them has it, and the other one, I mean, they both have it, but one finds the other one and helps them through their experience, their journey with it. Because she's kind of like the veteran in it, mm-hmm. of the two, although they're both children. So, you know, they're... They still have many years ahead of them. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah.
So it goes through with I'm sorry. I was going to say, it's just, it goes through with colon cancer and things too.
Yeah. I was going to say, so it's aimed like for kids, right? Yes. To help them more so understand what they're going to go through, right?
Yes. So it's like ages 7 through 9 is what it's kind of recommended at. But yes, it's to help them with, to understand what they might be facing or what a loved one is going to, it might be facing, and some different tools and things to help with that too.
Mm-hmm. So did your stepson drew all the photos?
He drew the two main characters, and then we kind of tweaked them a little bit. And then my publisher, they have an artist that did the rest of the drawings.
Okay, so it is published, like it's in stores. How did you get that? Like, this is your first book, correct?
Yes, it is.
And you got a publisher straight out of the gate. That's impressive.
Well, so I did. It's with Imagine We Publishers, and they do a lot of different books for a lot of different conditions to raise awareness and kind of help, you know, make things more normalized. And that it's not just children's books that they do, but I was selected to be in one of their collaborative books. And so that's how I got in contact with them. And so they've been a really great publisher. And then just also they have a phenomenal list of different topics out there that they.
What have they helped you do? Because I have friends that are authors that they're like, oh, I'm trying to get a publishing deal. Mm-hmm. So what is it like to have a publishing deal?
So I reached out to them. I had a consult and I pitched my idea and they backed it. They were up for it. Now I did, they kind of, because there's different ways that you can go about with publishing. Some publishers, like, they give you the offer and they pay you up front type of thing. And then other ones, like, kind of like you pay a portion or whatever it is up front. And so I did the second one. I paid my part that I would need to have it done. And then I get royalties back based off of what was sold.
What sold?
I'm trying to think of words.
So do you do a lot of book readings? Do you...
No, I haven't. No, I would like to. The problem is, so I did, mine was published during like the middle of COVID.
Gotcha.
So everything, I think my experience would have been completely different. Because they do like marketing and things like that. But with COVID, it's just kind of, and so I haven't really done any type of events other than like online events. Mm-hmm. Although that would be interesting to do.
So what bookstores is your book in? Like, can you just go do a Barnes & Noble and be like, hey,
You could request it, but it's on Amazon, and then you can buy it directly from Imagine We Publishers website. But I haven't made, like, any deals or anything with bookstores so that it's on their store, their shelves. Now, I've had people, like, they've said, like, they've requested it from their library, and so now they have it in their libraries,
That's cool. Their local ones.
But, yeah, so it's more of a direct online buy.
So how long did it take you to, like, produce the book? Like, sitting down and writing it? It's a children's book. I know you drew a lot of the photos, but how long was that process?
I would say it was at least a year, maybe a year and a half. It's a small chapter book. And so what I did is, before I pitched it to my publisher, I had already pretty much had it all. I had written it and I had sent it to a developmental editor. And so we had done all the edits. So there wasn't very much editing that had to be done, though. Once I sent it to the publisher, they had their illustrator do their part. And there was like some things after that were kind of like outside of it. Like, I did a glossary. And so they wanted to kind of develop that and different types, you know, little things here and there to do. So I would say the whole process probably took me about a year and a half. From start to publishing.
kind of like pitching a movie. You were really had all the completion done, and you were just like, oh, this is what we need to do. I know publishers and media companies like that when they're just like, oh, we don't have to take an idea and actually develop it. Mm-hmm. Everything's always already done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was because I had started it with didn't necessarily know the avenue that I wanted to go. Like, was I really going to try to go find a publisher, or was I just going to like self-publish it? And so I had a friend of mine, she had self-published a book. So she kind of gave me all her list of what I would need to do if that was the route I went. And so while I was still working on that, then this collaborative book came up with Imagine We, and it kind of just fell into my lap and it worked really well. So I was really happy with it.
That's the best way to do it. Like, when it just falls into place.
Yeah.
So are you going to try to do more book signings or?
I might. They have a thing where like you can get your, you can purchase your book, you know, like at a discount thing. So you can take it and go wherever you want with it and do all kinds of different events and things. I just haven't gone out really and done that. I've done like, some fundraisers for, the NORD FAP Research Fund. But I'm trying to think. I don't guess I had my book at the time, though, maybe. Okay. I can't remember. It's been so many years coming around. But that would be a good place to do that, though.
Oh, for sure.
Would be to, like, combine that type of thing with a book signing. So that's what I should do.
How long has it been out?
So it was published in 2022.
Okay.
Okay, so a couple years.
Couple years.
Yeah, not too long.
Yeah. That's really
eventually. Eventually, I'm going to do, I have two other, like, sequels to it, but I haven't started writing those, because it takes a lot of print
power. Yeah.
And writing a lot of emotional
roller coasters. Are you naturally a writer? Do you like writing?
I am. I did. Yeah, my dad, I don't know how he did it, but he taught me how to be a writer, which he is not a writer. He's a big reader, but so writing's been kind of something I've always, it's my art form, I would say, that and like poetry, which again, that's writing.
I'm if you're anything like me and my chronic pain, I only have so much energy in the day to get things done. So is that similar to you?
Oh yes. Like, and it's kind of the way too, like not only how it affects like the body, but the brain.
Yes.
The capacity, the both of them, especially when they're going after each other, it's, there's some days that I'm like, all I do is if it's like a weekend, I'm just going to rest that entire day. I have to limit my activities so that either I do activity all of one day of the weekend, or I have to split it up half and half. I can't do two full days of activity.
Sure.
Or I'm going to get sick.
Your website is really, really informative. So I'm not like the fact that you said you enjoy writing, like it's something I can tell based on the, like, she has really great long descriptions of things in there. Obviously in addition to your book, but I know besides the, your hereditary disease, obviously you've been dealing with since you were very young, but you also had a work injury, right? Which caused some other problems for you.
Oh my gosh. And so I fell twice at work. And one time it was my blood pressure bottomed out. It wasn't like a workers' comp or anything like that. But that triggered, so the first fall, and both times I hit my head, they were 8 years apart maybe. But so the first one, it triggered what we didn't know was at the time abdominal migraine. And so, and it was, I remember it was so weird. I just kept thinking, because I was in the hospital because they wouldn't let me go home. And because I was so dehydrated. But so I was having like this terrible headache, which I didn't ever get headaches before. And all I had ordered was Tylenol and morphine. Well, morphine doesn't really do anything for me. And I don't really like to take pain meds, like narcotic ones, if I can help it anyways. And it's like middle of the night, of course. So I'm like, I try the Tylenol. It doesn't do anything. And I give up and I'm like, fine, I'll take the morphine. And of course, you know, they're like, well, I mean, we can call a doctor and page them. And I'm like, it's the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. Like,
By the time the doctor gets in here, it's going to be a couple of hours. Like,
right.
And at this point, this is not a doctor that knows me. This isn't a doctor that knows that morphine doesn't work for me. And I'm like, I don't even know what to take at this point. I'd never had a headache this bad before at that point. But it was like a switch. All of a sudden, like, I started having so chronic abdominal pain, like, more than I had had. I'd gone on, like, cycles with it before over the years, but it had subsided pretty much, and it was pretty much not bothersome. And then, a switch happened. I had chronic nausea and chronic abdominal pain for years after taking that morphine. And I know now, like, it's not the morphine that did it. It was the abdominal migraine, because it can cause chronic abdominal pain as one of the things. Well, and then when I fell again a few years ago, a couple of years ago, I got post-concussion syndrome. Mm-hmm. And without a preventative migraine medicine, I would be in a 24/7 migraine. And that was a workers' comp one, so I learned a lot of things about workers' comp and what I would do differently for my care if I hit my head again.
What kind of a job are you doing?
Oh, it's just, I just fell on the ice in the parking lot.
Okay.
It wasn't even anything, like, really, I was walking in and I just fell on the ice.
Okay.
It wasn't, yeah. But,
probably should have had that clear, though.
Oh, yeah, they should have. And that's, I think that's probably why, too. They were like, okay, we'll cover your medical costs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a long journey, though, to figure out the abdominal migraine, because I'd had my gallbladder removed years later. So I fell the first time in 2015, and then I had my gallbladder removed in 2021. And that's when it, like, really set off, that abdominal migraine. And I spent, like, 6.5 months trying to figure out what was going on, because I just had so much increased pain and nothing was fixing it. So it wasn't necessarily a surprise then when I fell the second time and I ended up with migraine, that I would have another type of migraine. Just have two different types.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I had never heard of an abdominal migraine before I read that I'm not right. So
I had neither. I had gone to seven different specialists or seven different types of doctors, and I ended up with a neurologist. It's my last one. I was like, I don't know who else to go to. I've gone to all of my doctors. I've gone to a rheumatologist. I've gone to all these different types, and I ended up with a neurologist, and he did about two and a half months of testing on me, and he was like, okay, I got it figured out. And I'm like, what is it? And he's like, this. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, exactly. It's a what?
Yeah. I'm like, I've never heard of that. I only had heard of migraine. I was like, what? What do you mean? He's like, it depends where it's in your brain that it can do different parts of your body. And I'm like,
so it can be in your brain, but it can affect different parts of your body.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what an abdominal migraine is. So even though it's in your head, it'll affect your abdomen area.
Yeah. So it'll cause nausea is a big thing. Abdominal pain is a big thing for some people. Like, they have really bad vomiting from the nausea too. I didn't have vomiting with it, just chronic nausea, where I felt like I was going to, like, pass out and vomit at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So did you take a lot of Zofran?
And Zofran didn't work for me.
Okay.
So what I ended up doing is I took Bentyl for the abdominal migraine pain, which is technically for spasms.
Right.
And then I took Compazine, because it was the only thing, that would control my nausea. I went through all kinds of, like, I tried Zofran and Phanergan, and I took Benadryl. I did all these different things, and I ended up with Compazine. But Compazine, you're not supposed to take for long-term use. Like, it's I forget how it's dangerous, but it is. So my neurologist, he was like, okay, Zofran can actually worsen migraine. So try not to take that anyways. And he switched me from Compazine to Amitriptyline. And so I have a low dose of that, and that's enough to control my nausea. And then if I need it, I take Antivert, like a prescription strength for breakthrough relief of my nausea.
And you still take that every day?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I do. Otherwise, it'll come back.
Wow.
So beforehand, did you have any symptoms or anything like that?
So before I got diagnosed with the abdominal migraine, it was just pain and nausea. But then after my surgery, the pain worsened. And so it was, I couldn't get out of bed. Like, I mean, that was the most comfortable, I should say. I mean, I could get out of bed. It just was a lot more painful. So when I wasn't at work, I was laying down in bed, which deconditioned my body, which made my pain worse.
Yes.
And the Bentyl wasn't really helping anymore at this point. But then I started having all these other symptoms too. Like my memory started changing. I would do like word salads, or I'd forget what I was saying in a sentence, mm-hmm. and I couldn't remember what I was talking about. I started having a lot more touch sensitivity. So like a crease in the sheets, if I was laying on that, like that, and that today still hurts most of the time. But just little things, like I couldn't, my back hurt so much, but I couldn't get a massage because that hurt to be touched. So it was just, I had all these weird cognitive things that at the same time I wasn't understanding. But once I finally got diagnosed, it made sense. I was like, oh, well, I guess that can do all these different things. This, and I was like, oh, this is what brain fog is. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've heard of this. Yeah. Now I have it.
Yes. Now you know.
Like, that's great. That's great. And then of course, like when I fell the second time, the brain fog got even worse. Plus with post-concussion syndrome, like your emotions are all over the place. And just what I learned is actually from any type of brain injury is that, for recovery, it's best to have physical, speech, and occupational therapy and counseling. And that can actually be done anytime. Like, it can be done years later and still be helpful. Obviously, it's going to be the most helpful, like, soon after it.
Right.
But that's what I learned is what I should have been getting. Mm-hmm. To kind of get everything back in line so that I could function better and more normally.
So did you go ahead and do that now?
So I'm going to, I just learned this. I went to a seminar by a neuro center. And so I'm going to actually next year when my FSA restarts, I'm going to ask to go to speech therapy. I did go to physical therapy twice. I mean, well, I went for a little bit after my last fall. And then I went after my gallbladder surgery. Once I got diagnosed with abdominal migraine, then I tried to exercise and get reconditioned myself, and I just couldn't do it very well. Because I would do, if I had 2 days worth of activity in a row, then I would have a 3-day pain flare. And it was sometimes like, it was so painful to just sit. Like I couldn't sit on a pillow even.
Yeah.
And so I finally gave up and went to therapy. And I love physical therapy because not only do they teach you the right exercises to do, but when you're having a pain flare, they teach you the exercises to do during a pain flare, mm-hmm. so that you can keep moving, you can keep reconditioning, but you're not doing it in a way that's going to cause you more harm. Mm-hmm. And that way you can get through that flare and get back to the exercises that are really going to kind of do more strengthening or whatever for you. So I don't really like to go, like, I don't want to go to a gym,
yeah,
even with a personal trainer. I'm like, can I just go to physical therapy all the time? Plus, you keep me accountable.
Right.
I'm really bad about exercising without a therapist.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah
very much so.
I'm not a fan. Mm-hmm.
So but you enjoyed physical therapy very much.
I do. Like, when I go to physical therapy, like, I'm all in it. And I'm like, I'm going to be accountable. I'm going to be a good patient. And then they release me, and I'm like, I'm only going to do these exercises when I really need to, when my pain flares back up. And I'm like, oh, okay, my body's telling me that it's getting weaker, and I need to start doing that again. And then I do the same thing again. I just go in a cycle with that. But I've been able to keep it at a nice maintenance level. And because I learned, too, like, it's, I got where I was able to walk for long distances.
Okay.
And then I would do things. I'm like, okay, you know, and I'm thinking, I'm doing really good. I'm doing really good with this. Until I try to fly the stairs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's completely different. I'm walking, but this is completely different. And so I'm still not where I'd like to be with walking stairs. But that's one of my physical goals, that eventually I'm going to get there. I'm going to make myself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On my own exercise enough that I don't, like, feel winded and all those things from it. I can at least do it now, though. Mm-hmm. So I'm I've maintained enough there.
That's good. Yeah, small steps.
Climbing stairs is hard, though.
Mm-hmm. Especially for medical issues, yeah.
Like, and you wouldn't think about it. You're just like, I'm just walking. No, it's completely different muscles, and it's just, mm-hmm. I don't know. I always think about that, how weird it is that you think you're doing so good at something, which you are, but then you do something that's just a little bit different, and you're like, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I'm not nearly as where I thought I was.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I hate that.
What kind of exercises did they have you do at physical therapy?
So they did, they did a lot of core ones, but they also did the one that really has made a difference, because my hip flexors got so sore. Well, I mean, they were sore, but they got so weak, from being in bed for so long. And so they have, and this is the one that I do, like if I start to have lower back pain, or even if it goes like down into like the back of my thighs, my hamstrings, I guess that's what those are called. I know I'm like, okay, those are getting weak. I need to do those. And so I would do, you lay on your stomach and you have your leg like bent up and you have to lift it up. Oh, sorry. I had to lift it up like that. You do one at a time. Or, I mean, you can in both sides. And that makes such a difference for me with my pain. It's, that's like my favorite exercise that they did.
Okay.
But they did do, like, they did arm ones and they did leg ones, hip ones, a lot of core. They did back ones. They kind of did almost full body with me because I was just so deconditioned.
I did physical therapy a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I was not very pleasant to be around.
He was not open to it. Yeah,
and
say that.
For some reason, like I missed an appointment or something, and then they yelled at me on the phone. And my temper was like, you know, you've been there.
Yeah.
In the beginning of my accident, I was like so irritable. Mm-hmm. I was just like the slightest thing would set me off.
Sure.
And, they called and they were like grouching at me, and I was like, all right, fuck it. You guys, I don't need this.
I'm not going back.
And then I hung up the phone. Mm-hmm. And then Sammy had to get on the phone and like slide it or smooth it over for me. Mm-hmm. Because that's what she does is, I don't even, but you were just like, the whatever you said did it perfectly. I never had an issue like that again at physical therapy. Mm-mm. But whatever she did, however she glossed it over, how did you even do it?
I think I just explained, you know, you were just really struggling. This was a new thing for you with the chronic illness. You've never been sick like that before or had issues like that before. You're having a really bad day. And, you know, to be fair, the front desk person could have maybe been slightly more understanding because you are dealing with people who are not well.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think I pointed that out too. And then I just.
In a nice way.
Yeah. In a nice way.
Yeah.
Because I'm used to dealing with people. So it's fine. Yeah.
Do you ever have days like that where you're just like still very irritable?
Oh, yeah. It's when you're having high pain, it's just, oh my gosh. And then when it's, and then depression too, like if you're, whenever you're having depression, a lot of times it can come out as anger too and anxiety as well. And you get all the mix of all that. Yeah. It is, it's, you know, there's times that like, I'd tell my partner, I'd text him and I'd be like, okay, the way I would send it to him is, I'm in the bedroom in the dark, don't come talk to me. Mm-hmm. And then I would be like, that sounds a little rude. So I'd say, but come give me a kiss on the forehead, please. Please don't talk to me. Please don't talk to me. And that's like a nicer example of some of the ones I've had. Then there'd be like times that I would just like break down in tears at something. Like, you know, when you just get so angry or so irritable or whatever, and you're just like, I can't do anything but cry now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel you. It is. It's, especially when it's, and you're right, because like people that are having to deal with doing things in the healthcare industry, they're dealing with people who have a lot of health issues and don't feel good, and that needs to be part of the customer service to keep in mind.
We went to a neurologist's office at the height of COVID. You remember this?
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't gonna let her come in, and I like freaked out in front of everybody.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm dyslexic. I need anything I could think of. I was like, yeah. I need her in here. Mm-hmm. If we're going to have this, she's coming. And she just kind of looking at me like, what, bro? You need to, like, to calm down.
Yeah, it was, like, in the hallway.
Yeah, it was a security guard. Mm-hmm. And I was just, I didn't like it that we had to be there, number one. We drove, like, 30, 40 minutes to even get
there.
Probably, yeah. And then we got in there, and then the wait was, like, an hour long. And then they were just like, well, you can hit her up when you can, after your appointment. And I was like, no, there's not going to be an appointment if she can't come in there. Yeah. But they, long story short, they let her come in.
Yeah.
But
after all that,
I will tell you, they will definitely remember me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of providers that I think will remember me, too.
Yeah.
Same thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Triggers. There is one provider that I actually, when I was doing my accident, attorney actually made me switch, but I appreciate him because they wanted him to do surgery on my shoulder. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I think it was Dr. something.
Like Dr. McGee, something, I think, yeah.
And he was like, I think you just have a stiff joint. You just need to do physical therapy. But that wasn't enough for my attorneys at the time. And they were like, mm-hmm. making me switch. But looking back at it, I really commend him for not being like, well, I can see you next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What time's good for you? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you had any experiences with doctors or any scares or anything like that?
And scares?
Yeah, like a doctor wanting to do a procedure on you that you're just like, mm-hmm. I don't really
maybe
think
not comfortable with.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially when I was younger. Now, so much now is kind of, I have a really good set of doctors, a team of doctors that I really trust. And so they know how to handle me and my anxiety. So they do pretty good with me. And a lot of times it's kind of me pushing for procedures and things like that with them. But when I was younger, there was, it was a lot different than what it is now. It's, I had a really good pediatric GI doctor, but other than that, I didn't really have doctors I trusted until my second surgeon.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. How does your partner help you? Because, you know, everybody's like, oh, you have chronic pain, but it also affects your partner. Mm-hmm. How does he deal with things?
So he's a lot like my dad, which is why I chose him as a partner. Mm-hmm. But so my mom had a lot of chronic health issues too. And so my dad, he did the same thing. Like my partner, he just kind of leaves it up to me. He's like, you tell me what you want me to do, what you need. And I might make a suggestion here or there to you, but pretty much I'm just going to, you tell me what you want me to do. Because he knows, I'm like, if I pass out, don't call an ambulance on me. I'm fine. Just, I don't want an ambulance fee. Don't do that to me.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. And like, so he'll do things like I have him, he knows. So after I fell the second time, and I would have such a bad memory of things. And then if I couldn't remember something, or if I got irritated or overwhelmed, I would just start crying. And so I would call him, and he knows, like, if I call him, and I don't need him as much to do this now, but it was where either he answered. If he couldn't answer me, he would call me back as soon as he could. Because it might just be something like, I can't remember where I got this coffee from, and I want to get this coffee again. Where did I get it from? And it could be something as simple as that. And then that helps prevent me from having a meltdown. Or I'm having a lot of anxiety. I don't know what to do here. I need you to help me get out of this type of thing. And so he'll do things sometimes. Like he just, if we're in person, he'll grab me and he's just like, stop, breathe. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm like, okay. So it's anywhere from, just simple things. Like he has a list of things that he knows to tell me that, like, it's just sometimes like, I know, or I'm sorry. I'm like, I just need to feel heard and validated. And you can just tell me that in a quick text message and I'll feel better. Like, to help keep me kind of help me with my regulation or getting through something. And of course he's really good about going and picking up things for me if I need him to, or going to appointments with me if I need him to.
Do you still go to a lot of doctor's appointments now?
I do.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Yeah, most of them I don't really need anyone to go with me to, but sometimes, like, if I think it's going to be a painful one or a trauma-triggering one, then I usually will have my dad go with me, but if I need to, Mike will come with me. My partner, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, I'm sure life has changed dealing with mm-hmm. chronic pain.
Yeah.
For the both of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, again, he's a very generally healthy person, so he doesn't really have... He has chronic pain in his neck and things like that, but he doesn't have any other conditions, and he's learned how to maneuver life with his pain that he has in a way that it doesn't interfere as much as it has for me. Mm-hmm. So... In a lot of ways, he doesn't necessarily relate to what I'm going through. Like, if it's a stomach thing or something like that, like, obviously pain, mm-hmm. he can relate to that. But,
Well, I was just saying that because of what you're going through. I mean, mm-hmm. She sees what I go through, but it not only yeah. not just affects me, it affects her, it affects the right. whole household. And that's what I was saying, like, balancing it out mm-hmm. is hard.
It is. And it's, and like, for him, it's something that he had to learn about. Just like he's never had depression or anxiety, so he doesn't know what that's like. So I break things down for him, and then he's like, okay, now I understand what you're going through better, and I can help you from that. Or else, you know, in addition to what you're telling me, like, I have a better understanding when I break it down for him, he does. And so it's been like that since the beginning of our relationship. He didn't ever know me when I was, you know, little and before I had health stuff. So he doesn't know me any other way.
Right.
But it's been a life adjustment for him too, because it's a completely new experience for him.
Right. Mm-hmm. So did you deal with depression and anxiety before all mm-hmm. the, how's that changed?
So I am a lot more healed now. So when I had my first surgery when I was 9, okay. and I developed medical PTSD from that first year of surgeries. And so I had a lot of anger. I was very angry to the point that I was homicidal and suicidal. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of depression. And I didn't realize at the time that I was anxious, but I was. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, and I got into therapy and into high school, so I wasn't homicidal anymore. And I wasn't struggling so much like with suicidal ideation, things like that. But I would go into bouts throughout my life. And so now when I went back into therapy, I think in 2022, is when I was like, okay, I'm not running anymore from my trauma. Like, I'm going to sit down and do this until I feel like I'm the healed version I want to be, mm-hmm. not just my depression has lifted or my yeah. anxiety is under control right now. So I've been in intense trauma therapy for about 3 years now. And so it's so much different for me. Things that I didn't think I could ever do. I've made it through. I'm enjoying life again. That was a big thing is I didn't have joy for a lot of my life. And I do now. And I didn't, it's not something I could even envision before. I'd be like, what's the point of that? Like, I'm just stuck here until I can finally die. Like, why? What does it matter? But now I do. I get to have joy and I enjoy my life, and I'm much more, I'm doing a lot better at responding instead of reacting. Although there are things that trigger my PTSD and my anxiety. And so it does, sometimes I completely lose it, but
and that's
yeah,
normal. I mean,
yeah, yeah. I'm in a lot better place now mentally than I was for a lot of my life.
That's good.
Do you have to rest per day? Like, for me, I always have to take a nap in between the day. Like, I can't make it through.
Yeah, if my iron is too low, then I end up taking a nap pretty much every day. But I at least rest. I usually at least, like, sit down. Typically, I'll lie down. My partner, like, he'll cook dinner. And so I'll rest during that time period. Or the time that I by the time I get home and then he's cooking, I might do something while he's cooking up because I've gotten to rest before that. But I do. I rest every day because
I'm assuming you still work.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. I work full time, and it's going good now. Like when I had like those 6.5 months, it was so hard. Mm-hmm. Because I was in so much pain that when I would get home from work is when I would just stay in bed except for dinner. And, I lost a lot of weight during that time because I wasn't eating and I had no appetite. But now I'm doing pretty good. I've actually, work-life balance sometimes is hard. And so I had changed locations and I was trying to get the feel of everything. And I was really overdoing it. And I was like, okay. And it was to the point that my coworkers and my dad were yelling at me every day. And so I finally got that figured out. So now I'm not having flares on the weekends like I was. I'm doing much better about balancing instead of, overdoing where it's I'm pacing. I'm pacing okay. better.
Does your work understand about your pain issues, and do they support you?
They are. They're very supportive. I have a really great manager and a really good team that I work with, and so they help me out if I'm needing it. I have FMLA in place, so I can take intermittent leave when I need to. When I had my surgery, I had to take short-term disability, but they've worked really well with me and supported me, and I feel so blessed. And they understand. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go get stabbed because I have to get my port flushed or to get an iron infusion, and they're just like, oh, okay, you can get stabbed. Have fun. Mm-hmm. They're real good about all my appointments and things
that's
too.
Good. That's good.
Yeah.
Because that's hard to find these days. That, yes. that an employer that will actually understand you mm-hmm. and be like, cool, we understand you're a human. And things happen.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So. It's because I remember my first job, my first full-time job. I had gotten out of school and I was working with a hospice company and they were good. It wasn't them, but it was just all that driving with so too much stress on my body. And then it was to the point that I was like, I don't know that I can work. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And so, I learned after that, I was like, okay, I can't do traveling jobs. I can't. It's just too much. And so I was very lucky with my company. I found that they meet me halfway so that, and if I need to, I can work remotely some of the time.
Okay.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So they've been really flexible with me.
That's nice.
What motivates you to keep going?
So the reason I do advocacy and things is because I don't want people to go through what I went through as a kid, physically or mentally. That's what keeps me going advocacy wise. But see, it's interesting because the last podcast I was on, they asked me that too. And I just kind of was like, I don't know. I know what I do, what keeps me going advocacy wise, but in life, I don't have an answer for that really.
Yeah, in general, I'm more like what keeps you going in life, because every time I have somebody on, I learn a little bit from what they're experiencing. Mm-hmm. And if I'm all right as well, because my chronic pain has affected all of us. And I'm just like, I get a bit from everybody.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's what they were too. I'm sorry.
No, go on.
Well, so that was what they were asking too, and it's just, and I realized, I was like, I don't really have an answer. I know, there's things that keep me. I don't want to self harm anymore. I don't have a risk of that. But I know, when I did, I'd be like, well, I don't want to end up worse. So my luck is I'd end up worse. So I probably shouldn't do that. I'll just think about it. But yeah, I haven't figured out really. It's just kind of I guess maybe I would say I'm going to make the best out of life while I'm here.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a good
answer. Because my therapist, so she'll say, well, why do you go to the doctor and do all these things then if you are just, because I'm ready to die. Whenever it's my time, I'm ready. I'm not worried about that.
So you're not scared of death?
No. I had a near death. I had two near death experiences. And the last one I had, it was like the most deepest peace in, not even on this world. Like not, nothing.
I'm sorry, you got to talk to us about that. Now that
okay. Yeah. So in high school, so I had an ileostomy for 6 years where they had my small intestine. It came out on my abdomen and it collected waste in a bag. Okay. A lot of people know it as a colostomy, but that's actually if you have your colon out. Okay. Out of your, you know, like hanging out of your body, not the small intestine. But anyways, so I had it reversed and I had all these complications. And I mean, my doctor, like she would schedule me every week to see her. I had labs at least once a week because everything was in the toilet. And she was like, she told me later, she's like, I didn't know if I'd see you alive the next week. And I was in the hospital all the time. And there was this one day and I was laying on the couch because I was too weak to be in my bedroom that was upstairs. So I lived on the couch. And my mom was sitting on the couch. It was in the morning and I had my head on her, her lap. And I just knew, I was like, I'm going to die soon. And this incredible peace. And this is part of the problem, like the difficulty of wanting to live, right? Is because I've experienced that peace and there's nothing like that on earth. So of course I'm going to long for that. Of course I want that again.
How was it? How was like, did you know you were dying?
Mm-hmm, I did. I was like, I knew I was dying. Like I knew I didn't know how long, but I knew I was dying. And I was like, I need to tell my mom goodbye. So my dad was at work. I told my mom goodbye and she's crying and then that was it. Like, I don't remember anything after that for a while, but I remember that piece. And I remember like, I had to tell my mom goodbye, because I didn't know how much longer I had.
So at that point in time, you weren't afraid at all. You were just like, it's happening. No. It's here.
Yeah. And it's like to the point, like I've had, I'll be on like a turnpike and like, you know, cars are going 80 miles an hour and you're in rush hour traffic and you have a traffic jam. And I remember one time, like this truck, like I was like, he's going to hit me. Like I'm stopped on this, you know, but he's not going to make it. He's going to hit me. And I just remember going, I looked up in the mirror and I was just like, okay, this is it. Try not to brace.
Wow.
Like it's that level of like, I'm okay. I just don't want a painful death is my only wish. I really don't want a painful death. But other than that, I'm ready whenever it is. And so I've come to a place, though, where I'm all right being alive, waiting for that peace. And so I'm going to try to have the best quality of life that I have while I'm here and enjoy it the most that I can.
So let me ask you this question. After you die, mm-hmm. If you got an opportunity to come back, would you come back?
No.
Once.
Not at all.
Once is enough, right?
Yeah. Once is enough for me. I do not. No, and I do, like, I believe in reincarnation. And, like, I've been told before that, like, a past life that was most significant to mine now is that I had lost all my family. Like I witnessed it. I was super depressed. I like killed myself because of all of it. Wow. And they were like, and so this is what you selected for this life is to heal from that. And I'm like, okay, that's a little too real.
Yeah.
if that's true, I better not come back again. Cause I don't want to come back again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I'm like, no. Yeah, totally. One time is enough for me. Now, like, I wouldn't mind necessarily, like, checking in on people or something, but I'm good.
So, have you listened to some of our episodes before coming on?
No, I hadn't, honestly. Okay. It's on my list, though.
Oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason why we started the show is because I just got hit by a car. And I was in the filmmaking industry, the production industry, And I'd spend 18 hours, 20 hours on set, and I couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, why don't you start a podcast?
Because COVID came.
COVID came and
there's
everything.
Nothing else to do.
Yeah, entertainment industry shut down. Yeah. And I was like, who listens to a podcast? And it took us a couple. She was like, why don't you start a podcast? And I was like, all right, what are we going to talk about? And then she was like, well, why don't we start it about your health journey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then this podcast has been around for 5 years now.
Nice.
This is our most successful show on our network. Mm-hmm. So we're not just a podcast network. We're a streaming company as well. So people can purchase a subscription and you get streaming television and all of our original podcasting.
Oh, nice.
So that I've been working on this for this platform for over 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason why I asked you, you know, like what motivates you, what keeps you going? I think what keeps me going is I've always wanted to be successful.
Yeah.
And I'm just not quite there yet. And I feel like because I've been in those situations where I'm just going to put a gun in my mouth and pull the trigger. She's thought that. I mean, I think anybody that experiences chronic pain when you're first learning to deal with it,
yeah,
you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the reason why I never did anything like that is I've not hit the level of success that I want to be at.
Yeah.
And that's what always kept me going.
Mm-hmm.
And I with pain and everything, even though I have to take a nap, I do shows. Like we do a lot of horror cons to promote our network.
Nice.
So I will drive places, but it's sheer determination on my part to do it, because after the con, it usually takes me probably 2 weeks to bounce back.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because I'll come back and I will have to rest. Mm-hmm. She bounces back quicker than I do.
Yeah, because I don't have the
but pressure. It takes me a good 2 weeks to do it.
I bet. Yeah, those, I think any type of expo thing, like those are, I mean, it's just fast paced too. Not only is it constantly going, there's no downtime, and it's usually like multiple days.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, but yeah, no wonder that would be
such
a recovery period for you.
That's sheer me being like, I want people to know what we do. It's kind
Absolutely.
Of, do you subscribe to HBO?
My partner does, yeah.
So do you know how HBO started out?
No.
They started out with polka music.
Oh,
people would subscribe to them for polka, live polka concerts.
Wow.
And I think about that and I'm like, well, if HBO started out this way, our network can start out this way.
Mm-hmm.
And us being at a show is just us marketing on who we are.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always wanted to be in the entertainment industry. And when I got hurt, I really thought that was over with. Like, I can do smaller days, but my friends are like, oh, we're going to be on this crew, and I'm just like, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. I already know
so
it.
Long. Yeah.
So, I've noticed that I need to stay in my lane. I need to work in the parameters that my body can handle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it still hurts for people to touch me. Mm-hmm. I don't really like to be touched.
Yeah.
Like, no, if no. I can help it, like I have so much pain in my neck and my back that I'm just like, even if somebody like tries to hug me, I have to brace for it.
Yeah,
because it hurts me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad because that not just affects me, it affects her, it affects everybody. I mean, it's the way, it's our new normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like it because that's not how I used to be. In my past life, I never had to take medicines. I could get less than 5 hours of sleep and be good to go for days. And now I'm just like, oh, I gotta rest all the time. I only have so much energy to do. I'm sure you don't sleep well at night.
Yeah,
you toss and turn.
I do a lot sometimes now. So when I fell this last time and my doctor put me on a medicine, a preventive migraine. It lets me sleep most of the time. So I actually sleep decent now, but I didn't before at all. Like, and there's still nights that I don't. But yeah, it's only because of that medicine.
Mm-hmm. I take sleeping medicine. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I think I can actually sleep is because of the medicine. Or when I run out, I'm just up. Mm-hmm. I'm just up all night long. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like tossing and turning, and then you're thinking, oh, everybody else is asleep, you should be asleep, and then your mind starts to race, and you're just like, well,
it's the worst.
This is how it's going to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
it is, and it's a horrible cycle.
Yeah.
That it creates.
How many podcast episodes do you, how many podcast interviews do you do?
I have done, I'm not sure a number. I've done quite a few though.
Yeah.
She has a lot listed on her website.
That's great. How do you find your interviews? Do people reach out to you or you reach out to them?
Sometimes people reach out, but I mainly reach out on those. And I find a lot on Instagram, a few on TikTok. I would say probably more Instagram, though, than Facebook even.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like Instagram's a big one.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah.
What do you want people to know about you?
About me?
Yeah.
Usually it's about one of my conditions. okay, so let me think about that.
Because you do a lot of interviews, and I try to ask questions that are off the beaten path that you don't get asked a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what do you want people to know about you?
See, and that's one I haven't ever been asked before. I think I would maybe say, gosh, that's a hard one. Okay, maybe this. That I don't hate being alive anymore.
That's okay. That's a good
one. I don't necessarily. I wouldn't say that I want to be. Right? That's a strong word. But I don't hate it anymore.
I'm the total opposite of you because I fear death.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of people die in my life, and I think about death more than the most people because I'm afraid of it. And the reason why I'm afraid of it is I just don't know what's next. You know, it's like you're going to the first day of school, and you're like, you know, the first day of school is coming up,
mm-hmm.
and you know you have to go. And after you get there, you're gonna be cool, but it's just getting there. Mm-hmm. You're just that's my anxiety is like, okay, when I get there, I'm sure I'll be fine, but getting there, what do I have to go through?
Mm-hmm.
What
absolutely.
Is the process like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel that and people have different near death experiences too, so it doesn't always help.
Yeah.
You know, because people are so different in what they've experienced. So and that's part of, I think, too, like why I'm very afraid of a painful death because I'm also afraid, like I'm a do not resuscitate order. I would say that would be my other thing I'd like people to know is that if you find me, please don't resuscitate me. That's one of my biggest fears.
Mm-hmm.
But it is. It's a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
I don't have any kind of orders like that, but maybe I should put that in order. Because I know a lot of people with chronic pain say do not resuscitate. And I have no, like, written will or anything like of what to do if I die.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives me some stuff to think about. Like, oh, would I not want to be resuscitated? Mm-hmm. I know that might be hard for her.
But it's what you want, you know.
And it helps take decisions off, too, like that pressure because, and at least like having a verbal discussion, but in the writing, like, too, then it helps support what that person's wanting.
You're right.
Legally. And so, my mom didn't want to be a do not resuscitate. I made her one. Mm-hmm. She didn't want it, though. But in the state she was in, it was the best thing for her.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very, it's not a one fits all question.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
I know I don't want to be an organ donor.
Yeah.
I have my reasons for that. I just don't want to, and she knows that. I do not want to be an organ donor.
Yeah. My mom didn't want to be either.
Mm-hmm.
What does life look for you in 5 years?
In five years? 2 years? I think it's the same. I might have some more health projects done, but hopefully maybe I'll be doing more advocacy again. I had to kind of take a break the last year or so. My mom died last year, and so I've stepped back a lot. So I'm hoping by 2 years, maybe I'll have a book in progress, another one, and I'll kind of have found more of my footing of how I want to do my advocacy. Because
when
I know
advocacy. Explain that. Like, what do you do?
So I started Life's a Polyp for my two rare diseases, the familial adenomatous polyposis and short bowel syndrome. And so I do a lot of rare disease advocacy.
Okay.
And cancer advocacy.
Okay.
And I used to write a lot for it. And I've stepped back from that. I've kind of started doing a little bit more videos and I've gotten back into doing podcast interviews. For some reason, they're kind of
easier.
I guess they're easier. It's not as draining on me.
Yes.
Physically and mentally, because my capacity is not, it's not where it is or was and where I want it to be, but it's getting better.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'd say in 2 years, 5 years, I'd like to have at least another book in the works, getting close to publishing, and kind of, I know I don't want to do advocacy full time because I can't. I get more sick. If I stay in the house all the time and I don't have a routine and I don't have something that makes me have a routine, then I get more sick. Mm-hmm. So I've realized what I used to want to do was to be full time, do just full time advocacy. Okay, I can't do that. I've discovered. So, but I would like to kind of have a better footing on it as to how I'm been changing it over the last year, what I want that to look like exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's probably going to be the same.
Okay. Yeah. You're a writer too. I know we've said that, but you've also been published in different health organizations. You told me she...
Oh yeah, like the Mighty.
The Mighty, yeah. That's what I'm talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
How was writing for them?
It was good. I haven't done that in a long time, but I did do quite a few for them, and I've done, I've gotten published in two magazines, which is very exciting for me, and so yeah, it's just kind of, I don't write poetry as much as I used to. Like, I used to really enjoy poetry writing, but now I just kind of write my stories, or my mom's stories.
When you write for the Mighty, are you like, are you an employee of them, or do you just submit it to them and hope they pick it up?
Yeah, you just submit it and hope they pick it up. And like they do, I did quite a few for like, I think it was sandwiches and meds or, I feel bad now for not remembering.
Okay.
But they published quite a few of mine on their website, but, and it was the same type of thing. I'd send it to them and they would tell me yes or no, or we want you to change this or that. And I just haven't submitted things to them in quite a while.
Yeah. Maybe that's a good way to get your book out there.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Marketing.
To do more
marketing.
Of that. Yeah. Yeah. And that's one thing I'm not very good at.
Well,
but I'm
during
okay
COVID,
with it.
Yeah. I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad has a book. And he wrote a book, and I'm actually trying to get it out there more. So my brother and I are actually going to do book signings.
Oh, cool.
And he's going to read it, and I'm going to do the whole production aspect of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm when you subscribe to Limitless Broadcasting Network, you can actually get the book. So he reads it chapter by chapter by chapter. And then we reach out to smaller bookstores and say, hey, how about we do a book signing and then we try to get a hold of the local media and promote it? And
yeah,
it's been a thing.
That's really awesome. See, that is, maybe that's something I should.
But again, that goes back to my level of success. Like, where do I actually want to go? And and I just kind of think out of the box. That's why when I do interviews like this, I don't want to be the typical interviewer. I want to ask you questions to make you think.
Mm-hmm. You definitely have.
So, where can people find you?
So, lifesapolyp.com is my website. And then my handle on social media is lifesapolyp. I have cut back a little bit on social media. So, I'm on the big ones, though, like Facebook and LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok.
Mm-hmm. And what was the name of your book?
I had a complete brain fog moment. It's Lysopolyp, Physique, and Katie. And I'll show you a little. This is what it looks like. My little mutants. That's Zeke and that's Katie.
Flip it open.
Oh, yeah. So let me find a picture. Here we go. So here's one.
That's super cool.
Illustrations, yeah.
And that makes it interesting for children to want to read it.
Yeah.
You should try to get that into schools.
Oh, that's a really great idea.
Yeah.
Like elementary schools?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. See, maybe that's something.
In pre-kindergarten, because, I mean, this type of disease affects everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody could benefit that. With your book, there's so much marketing you could do. There's so many places you could reach out to.
Yeah. No, you're right. That's something I need to work more on. It's just a very good 5-year goal.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I appreciate that.
Thank you for reaching out and wanting to be a guest on the show. We like it when people reach out to us so we can hear their story and
get to know them
and grow from them, because everybody we have on, I grow from.
Mm-hmm. And I think we can all grow from one another. Yes. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you want people to know about you before we go?
I don't know. I think that covers a lot. A good things. Okay. So, don't hesitate. People are always welcome to reach out.
Oh, of course.
Absolutely.
Sometimes I may not respond very quickly, but I will eventually.
Mm-hmm. We get that.
Yeah.
Just give me some grace.
We get that.
That happens, especially social media.
Yeah.
It's that brain capacity. You're like,
Oops.
And if you want to buy one of her books, go ahead and reach out to her on social media.
Or check it out on Amazon.
Absolutely. We'll get a link from you and put it in the show notes.
Sure.
Again, thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Thank you for having me and sharing your story.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
You'll enjoy the first episode. The first episode of the show, we go into great
what
details.
Happens. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I still get people being like, oh, that's such an amazing story.
Mm-hmm.
The moment I knew things were kicking on is I was at the Indiana Comic Con, and people are like, oh, yeah, we know what your podcast is. And I was like, well,
that's cool.
We're doing something right.
Yeah.
Because when I told her we're going to do horror cons, so we do a lot of horror cons.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first told her we were going to do this, she was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do? And now
so
she
lost.
Now these are the most, she loves it.
Yeah.
They're a lot of work, but they're a lot of fun.
They're a lot of work. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's when you can combine when you have fun while you're working. That makes such a difference too.
It really does.
Absolutely.
Really
does. Yeah. Yes. All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for tuning in.
Mm-hmm.
Please like and subscribe. Go follow her on Instagram,
Facebook,
and all the social medias out there. And we will see you in the next episode.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Painful Truth of Living with Chronic Pain with Robbie and Sammy. Make sure you like, follow, and subscribe to the Limitless Podcast Network's own channel, Instagram, and all things social media. And we'll see you all real soon.